Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's edition of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports, episode 59. I'm your host, Nicholas Denotic. I hope you all had a fantastic week, enjoyed what was a pretty darn good week two of football, and also muddled through what I'm considering and what I think a lot of people would say is the most chaotic regular season week that had nothing to do with real football on the field. Week two into week three, it might be most chaotic regular season week, period. I mean, if we're thinking in terms of, you know, just the thing, well, let's not put the cart before the horse. We'll get into all the big developments that happened this past week. Let's jump right in to the standout seven. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, you knew this was going to lead the show. Should it lead the show? Maybe not, but it will. So, the Eli Manning era, by all accounts, in New York for the New York Football Giants is finally officially over. You know, Pat Shurmur and the organization deciding to go with first-round pick Daniel Jones this week rather than have Manning grit and bear it again with an under-talented receiving core, an offensive line which has improved in the past few years, but, you know, is better at run blocking than pass blocking, a defense that probably at this point seems like they couldn't exactly, I don't even know what joke to make here. I wouldn't say couldn't cover themselves with a blanket, because they can cover a little bit, but they don't have a pass rush, they're not great at tackling, they're not great at stopping, you know, much of anything. But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about, you know, Eli Manning, and the guy's going to retire, top 10 in passing yards, top 10 in touchdowns. A 116-116 record, unless they give him a pity start later in the year, which I'm sure, based on the way he reacted when they tried to keep his streak going and let him start the first half of a game and not play the second half, he would decline. Is he done? I mean, some of his comments made it seem like he would want to play again, but I don't think he'd want to play outside of New York. He refused to waive, or he said he wouldn't waive his no-trade clause, so he's not going anywhere, not during the year. It's interesting to me. I don't know. I had this to say, though. This is what I wanted to weigh in on. Ryan Clark on ESPN, and then some of the, you know, let's start with Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark made this comment, and it really stuck out to me because it hit home. He said, and I quote, and it is a quote because I transcribed it as I was watching. I believe it was on SportsCenter or NFL Live, one of the many shows. He's a pretty good analyst. He makes his way around. He is no longer a capable quarterback. Eli Manning, no longer a capable quarterback. Now, I'm not here to say Eli Manning is a top five quarterback in the NFL. Let's take a look at some quantifiable statistics here, shall we? QBR, 2019 QBR season leaders deployed and quote-unquote perfected by ESPN, used by a lot of analysts, right? Number one right now, Patrick Mahomes at 92.9. 50 is average. Okay. 50 is average. Let's look at some of the quarterbacks that are below 50. Gardner Minshew, 49.7. Matt Ryan, 48. Jacoby Brissett, 47.2. Kyler Murray, 46.2. Okay, let's look at where Eli Manning sits. 37.7. He is 23rd in the league. Okay, let's see who's below the man who's no longer capable to play quarterback in the league. Look, 37.7 in a vacuum sounds not so good. But when you consider this is not the easiest grading scale in the world, let's see who's below him. Oh, Aaron Rodgers, who a lot of people consider to be the most talented quarterback in the league, maybe. 35.9. Okay. Yeah, then we have Sam Darnold, 33.8. Jameis Winston, 32. Jared Goff, 30.5. Mitchell Trubisky, 28.2. Cam Newton, 26.9. Big Ben, 25.4. Kirk Cousins, 16.6. Do you see my point, folks? All right, maybe you're not a fan of QBR. Okay, let's take it to the traditional method, right? Passer rating. Right now, Lamar Jackson has a tragically inflated 145.2. He's leading the league. Dak Prescott, in terms of regulars, is second at 142.9. Mahomes is up there at 136.3. All right, so where's Eli Manning? Considering, you know, this is NFL.com's rankings. It includes all quarterbacks that have taken a snap here. It includes Daniel Jones with his four passes. Eli Manning, including every quarterback that's taken a snap, sitting at 78.7, that's 32nd, okay. So let's see who's below Eli Manning. Kirk Cousins again, Baker Mayfield, Okay, Cam Newton again, Jameis Winston, Ben Roethlisberger, Mitchell Trubisky. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're thinking, all right, well, you know, it's fluky, small sample size. He's having a good, maybe he's playing well, which wouldn't make any sense to this argument. Maybe everyone else is playing poorly. Okay, sure. Last season, he ended the year at 49.1 QBR, which is just about tragically average, right? For context, the next quarterback was Josh Allen, 49.8. Baker Mayfield, who by all accounts had a good rookie year, right? 51.2. Okay. Interesting. Interesting. Below Eli Manning last year, Alex Smith, Derek Carr, Sam Darnold, Case Keenum, Lamar Jackson. Remember when Lamar Jackson was winning ball games left and right? Lamar Jackson was third to last qualified passers in QBR. Third to last. You know who's below him? Ryan Tannehill, who's no longer a starter, and Josh Rosen, who just got named a starter. Okay, once again, maybe it's fluky. Let's take it to passer rating. Passer rating last year, Eli racked up a 92.4, which is significantly higher than what he's at right now at 78.7. Right on the year, 21 touchdowns to 11 picks, a year where he didn't have his number one wideout for just about the entirety of the season, with an offensive line that was still kind of coming together, a left tackle that they overpaid for, who underperformed, their best acquisition being, you know, Will Hernandez on the line, who's, you know, a big hog molly, but he's better run blocker than pass blocker. A shaky right side of the line. Okay, so who was below him last year? Marcus Mariota. Okay. Nick Mullins, my boy, who performed decently, 13-10. Jameis Winston, Matthew Stafford, Andy Dalton, Alex Smith, Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco, Case Keenum, who is now still a starter, Sam Darnold, way down at, 77.6. That's interesting. That's lower than in a whole year. Granted, he didn't play every game. He was lower than Eli is right now, but now is the time that they have to make a change. Now, look, folks, I'm not begrudging the Giants making a change. If anything, I thought that it should have been 2 years ago or this year. You know, make the change. Okay, cool. Cut bait with Manning. That's fine. But to go midseason and to make it seem like, all right, we're in on this. This is going to be Eli's last year. Daniel Jones is going to get a year to learn, right? He's going to get a year to learn maybe later in the year. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a Manning-Kurt Warner situation where, you know, they start decent, but then you value the future over the mediocre playoff appearance this year, which is what it seemed like the Giants did back then. And now they're sitting at 0-2. Not a good team, I would say. But, you know, they didn't come into the year a good team. No one expected them to be a playoff team. So why are they doing this? Well, they're playing at Tampa. Perhaps they think they could take down Jameis Winston. You know, they look at the stats, they, well, he's lower in the passer rating ranks than Eli Manning. So clearly, if we run Daniel Jones out there to make his first career start, we're fine. We're golden. Then they take on Washington at home, taking on Case Keenum, taking on a team that's really not that great, but I would argue is probably still better than the New York Football Giants, with that being the final game of Golden Tate's suspension especially. Then they got Minnesota. They're not winning that game. Then they're at New England. Then they've got Arizona at home, right? So that's the interesting one. Arizona at home would have been the cushy landing spot, in theory. Then they're at Detroit. Then they got Dallas at home. Then they play the Jets at home, but it's really an away game. The Bears, the Packers, the Eagles, Dolphins, Redskins, Eagles, last three games of the year. So what are they expecting from this Daniel Jones run? Are they expecting him to go Baker Mayfield and try and lead an almost playoff push? Are they expecting him to win ball games? Or they just wanted to get him out there because Pat Shurmur wanted ownership to tie him to Daniel Jones? This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is the way it works. I mean, they think, you know, if Jones goes out there and plays pretty well, with Pat Shurmur being the offensive guy, we can't just let Shurmur go. You know, Jones will have to learn a whole new system, and then, you know, it won't be worth it. Look at Freddie Kitchens. Freddie Kitchens worked with Baker Mayfield to the point where the team made him the head coach. They promote these offensive guys because they want to keep them with the young quarterback. They know, you know, quarterback plays well, the offense will be good, offense is good, team is good, we're a contender. All right, phenomenal. But with that being said, has Pat Shurmur shown you enough during his time as the Giants head coach to have faith in him? As an offensive mind, as a I don't want to question his leadership abilities, but as a leader of men, as a head football coach in the National Football League, has Pat Shurmur shown you enough? When he was in Minnesota, right? Him and Case Keenum went crazy. And it got him a head coaching job, and it got Keenum a starting job. Is Keenum good enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? Probably not. Probably not. For a team that's not really contending, sure. But, you know, we saw Blake Bortles start for a playoff team. So, I mean, I guess the bar is low. But Eli Manning, no. Eli Manning is not capable. He is not good enough to be a starting quarterback for a team that, by all accounts, is not going to make the playoffs, by a team that shouldn't expect it's going to make the playoffs, by a team that's sitting at 0-2. 12% of 0-2 teams make the playoffs. There are currently 11 0-2 teams. Let's run down the gauntlet here. We're going to do this later in the show as well. We're going to run through these a little bit more in detail. You play along at home. Let me know what you think at Nick Donatic everywhere in the comments, wherever you're listening to this, or even bring this up if you're a Giants fan or talking to anyone who might be a Giants fan. Are the New York Giants better than these other 10 teams? Let's run through. Cincinnati. Are the Giants better than the Bengals? No. Not as presently constituted. And I wouldn't say it's really super close. Are they better than Jacksonville? Clearly no. Are they better than Arizona? It's questionable. But do they have a brighter future? Also questionable. I don't know. I'll give you that one. Are they better than Carolina? Without Cam Newton? Possibly. But it's closer than the Giants would... It's closer than Carolina would like. I'd still probably take Carolina in that game. Are they better than the Washington Redskins? Probably not. Probably not. If Alex Smith were at the helm, definitely not. If Dwayne Haskins were at the helm, I'd probably lean towards definitely not. Are they better than the Pittsburgh Steelers, even sans Ben Roethlisberger? No. They're not. Are they better? And I know all these teams are not in the NFC. I'm just saying, 12%, 1 in 8 about, makes the playoffs. Are they better than any of these teams? Because, you know, statistically, there's going to be one. Just curious. Are they better than Miami? Yeah. Are they better than Oakland? Well, they're not in the same conference, but no. Are they better than Denver? No. Are they better than the Jets? Without Darnold? Probably. So let's look through some NFC standings here, right, while we're here. In their own division, they are not better than the Dallas Cowboys. They are not better than the Eagles. They are not better than the Redskins, although it's close. Not better than the Rams. Not better than the Niners. Not better than Seattle. Perhaps better than the Cardinals. I'll give you that one. One. Not better than Green Bay, not better than Detroit, the Vikings, or the Bears, not better than the Falcons, Saints, probably not better than the Bucks or the Panthers. So right now, they're probably the worst team in the NFC next to the Cardinals. Is Daniel Jones, look, I'm a Giants fan, if you know what I mean? So if Daniel Jones goes out and lights it up, it'd be great, phenomenal, you know, this is the next guy, cool, all right. I was a fan of Kurt Warner when he got benched. I was a little confused, I was a kid. I was like, man, Kurt Warner wasn't playing that bad. All right, well, we'll go with the young guys, see what happens. They wind up tanking that season, but they make the playoffs the next year. Is that what they're posturing for? Is it a narrative thing? Obviously, I think from Shurmur's perspective, he wants to tie himself to the young quarterback, so this way, you know, you can't really let him go. If he doesn't play all year or he plays two games, you could reasonably say, all right, Pat, two bad years in a row, we're going to let you go. Get a new guy in here, new guy to buy in with Daniel Jones, new guy, new system, new everything. All right. Let them go, get a young, maybe like a Zach Taylor kind of coach, you know what I mean, out there in Cincinnati. Somebody cut from the cloth of a Sean McVay, in L.A. But no, now it's Shurmur's show for at least this season, probably at least next season as well, unless they're, 2-9, something like that, or they have another bad year. And what did they do to help Manning in the offseason? All right. So they trade his number one wideout and one of their better pass rushers for Kevin Zeitler, a good guard, great guard, And they sign Golden Tate, who then gets promptly suspended, which is obviously they couldn't have known that. They sign Golden Tate for some reason. There's a bevy of wide receivers out there, and they're like, all right, well, Tate's the guy we're targeting. Sure. Okay, Golden Tate. Let's see how he plays. Golden Tate's not a bad wideout, but you need a number one. I don't think Golden Tate's ever been a phenomenal number one wideout, in my opinion. He's in the B tier of number ones and the A tier of number twos. And that leads the question, can Sterling Shepard be a number one wide receiver? And he hasn't really shown any inclination that he can. And Evan Ingram's supposed to have been, you know, he had a great game in week one. Evan Ingram should be a focal point in the offense. Didn't really have too much of an impact last week to my recollection to watching the game. And you have the core of the problem, in my opinion, becomes the way this offense is structured and the way they tend to, you know, come and go on Saquon Barkley. He's easily their best player on offense. Probably on the team. Easily their best player. So to be able to so easily, you know, opening drive, bust off a big run against the Cowboys, and then you forget about him for two quarters. You know, you give him the ball 10 times in the first half, you forget about him for the whole third quarter, you're down big. Okay, well, what are we doing here? What is our strength, and what are we going to stick to? Where's the dedication to, you know, the run game? It was easy in Minnesota with Case Keenum when Dalvin Cook was out, and Latavius Murray was your lead back, and it was easy to kind of forget about him because he's not that big hitter kind of guy. He's the grind-out running game kind of guy. And Saquon Barkley can do that as well, but he's so explosive that if you grind out, it is almost inevitable that he's going to break one. So it's if you stop grinding it, you're almost giving up on the run game, and this is a team that should be run first, run forward, and their offensive line excels at run blocking. So where is it? I don't get it, and it's a CYA move for the front office, and I'd say Eli Manning is going to be a Hall of Famer. Probably not a first ballot because he doesn't exactly have the cachet to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, especially if Terrell Owens wasn't. And I know that was a personality thing, but Terrell Owens was so dominant he should have easily been one. Eli will probably be a third ballot, maybe, Hall of Famer, but he is. Two-time Super Bowl champ, and they're big, you know, kind of momentous occasions that people remember. Top 10, he's a stat compiler, but hey, stat compilers make Hall of Fames. You know what I mean? It's hard to have stuck around that long and to have done it well enough to be, you know, a Hall of Famer. And nothing against Ryan Clark. I usually like his analysis, but I think he's dead wrong on this one. And, I had to point that out. I just think he's dead wrong. I think this move is a CYA move, and I think it continues the failure of the, you know, latter stages of Eli Manning's career on the team's behalf. I mean, the guy hasn't been, you know, when he was quote-unquote elite Eli, right? Remember, he had a few good years, and he was good in his first year under McAdoo. He was fantastic, one of the best years of his career, if not the best. So to turn around and say that in a handful of years, the guy has deteriorated to the worst quarterback in football, that's just not the case. The fact of the matter is, it's when he was at his best early in his career, it was with a big body wideout he could toss it up to. The guy loves to go deep, he loves to toss the ball up. And when they had Odell, it was great, but Odell wasn't the big body wideout that Plaxico Burress was. Plaxico can go out and grab the ball over somebody. Odell could do the same, but I don't know. I think this team has failed him in the latter stages after the second Super Bowl. They were just happy to let it coast past there, and that whether that be on Jerry Reese, whether that be on Gettleman now, whoever you want to give it to. And some of the blame obviously goes to Eli, because he's not exactly Peyton Manning, we know that. But I think it's a little crazy. Number two in the standout seven, it's got to be, you know what it is, it's got to be Antonio Brown, already done in New England, released by the Patriots after 11 days. It's kind of crazy. You know, we saw the press conference the other day with Belichick getting asked over and over and over about Antonio Brown, and he leaves, and I thought to myself, he's not gonna take this for long. Either he's going to get frustrated, and this is going to become a thing, and all his press conferences are going to be awful, or they're just going to get rid of him. And then it comes out that Antonio Brown was sending, quote-unquote, intimidating text messages to one of his accusers, or about one of his accusers, and Robert Kraft didn't like that. They get rid of him. And by all accounts, from what I've heard from, you know, guys like Jay Glazer, he might be done in the NFL. I am not an expert on the sexual assault accusations against him. I'm not here to really go into that. We try to stick to pretty much the mainly football things, but sometimes it bleeds into, you know, you have a star receiver who is a diva and who can't really, you know, keep it together on his own, and then you add in something like this, and it's quite possible that he could have played his last down in the NFL. Which is, you know, some people would say the tragedy, and people have to care for his mental health. And, you know, I'm not wishing anything bad on the guy, but when you're, you know, playing the villain like he was so clearly trying to do, you can't then have people turn around and want you to be treated with kid gloves, right? Because you're so clearly playing the villain. When you have a conversation with your head coach and record it and put it online, or you're doing things like that, and you're forcing your way out of a team after you seem to be, quote-unquote, you know, so happy to be with them, and, you know, deceiving guys like Jerry Rice, and, you know, then you're in New England and business is booming, and, you know, you catch one touchdown against the Dolphins, and that's it. Your time in New England is over. Chad Johnson spent more time in New England than you, and he was a shell of himself by that point. And that says something. So you know what? Wish all the best to everybody involved, but I think he made his bed here. Think he certainly did. Number 3 in the standout 7, and in future weeks this will usually be number 1, but we had to push it down because of the breaking news this week. Well, breaking, quote-unquote, but the bigger story, new little segment we're going to do, so we'll pit one against the other. What's the bigger story, Big Ben being done for the year or Drew Brees being done for 6-plus weeks? I think it's easily got to be Brees, yeah? So this Pittsburgh team is reliant on Ben, obviously, but if you take a look at the AFC kind of landscape and the way Pittsburgh's played with him and where they're sitting, I don't think Pittsburgh is really a title contender this year. I said it at the beginning of the year. I think they're an in-between state. We want to see if Juju could be number one. All right, cool. You know, we want to see if James Conner could step up and be a consistent lead back. All right, cool. You know, see where else you can get contributions. They just acquired Minka Fitzpatrick. Try and beef up the defense a little bit. Maybe go back to a little bit of the old school kind of Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, when Ben was winning Super Bowls, he wasn't throwing for 450 yards a game. Ben was, you know, a complimentary style quarterback for the most part. He was always considered more capable than Eli Manning. But realistically, those Super Bowl teams were very similar. Defensive-centric. You know what I mean? And if you take a look at the AFC landscape, like I said, you have the Pats at 2-0. They're going to win that division. The Chiefs sitting at 2-0. The Chargers 1-1 because they refused to sign a kicker. They have a punter at kicker, and it cost them a football game, and they're fine with this. Anyone else would be laughed at, but I guess because they're a West Coast team, nobody really cares. All right, whatever. Raiders at 1-1 haven't looked that bad. Ravens at 2-0 look like they're gangbusters right now. Browns might be heating up. And then we look into the AFC South, which is, you know, a clown fiesta. The Titans are probably the worst team in that division. Gardner Minshew has injected some life into the Jags. The Colts are good even with Brissett, and the Texans are the Texans. So this Pittsburgh Steelers team, probably not a playoff team anyway. In the NFC, on the other hand, there's some real competitors for the Saints that they'd like to have home field for. You take a look, the Dallas Cowboys already 2-0, the Rams already 2-0, with a win over the Saints last week, and a fairly convincing one, albeit Breeze goes down, but then you have Teddy Bridgewater, my boy, and, you know, he looked kind of uncomfortable. 17 of 30 for a 165, no real plays being made for him, I would say. You know, you expect this team usually has some explosive big play, you know, receivers, some big plays from Kamara. 10 catches for 89 for Michael Thomas. I mean, he caught the ball. That's great, but 89 yards. This is a big game. Eli Apple doing Eli Apple things on the other side. Then the defense gives up 27. Goff throws for 283. Todd Gurley looked a little bit like Todd Gurley, but not really. Still kind of concerned about that, but Cooper Kupp went off, and he wasn't there last year in their game, and that's a big one. Cooper Kupp got hurt last postseason. Nobody really talks about that, and if he could stay healthy all year, this adds another dimension to this Rams offense. And with Breeze being on 6-plus weeks, you're kind of questioning at that point, all right, well, home field advantage should probably be out of the question. Will we even win the division? If you take a look, right now they're tied with the Falcons and Bucks. I would say the Bucks, while I've always liked their personnel on offense and in that passing attack, probably not a playoff team, but you never know. And this Falcons team looked decent, man. They look good against the Eagles. A clutch win late. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And it's could be a problem. It really could, especially when you look around and you see the Lions have a half-game lead on them because of a tie. And you look at the NFC West where there are three teams at 2-0. Next in the bigger story, Houston holding on late or Minshew continuing to play well? Now, obviously, you know, I wrote this on Sunday, and I was going to say Minshew anyway. But then Minshew goes out and plays pretty darn well on Thursday Night Football, and all of a sudden I'm sitting back thinking, hold on. I said it last week. This kid is pretty good. He had a pretty good college career. He had a great college career. People slept on this guy. And, you know, he's ready to ball out. And for Houston's sake, it's a good thing they did hold on and win that one. Because if they lose that and slip to 0-2, the Jags will be sitting at 2-1 right now. That's a pretty good place to be in. You know what I mean? They got a half-game lead through two games. The Texans, points for 41, points against 42. Not exactly looking like world beaters right now, but Gardner Minshew could be the story. And finally, the last one in here is an interesting one. Two legendary NFC teams sitting at 2-0, and I glazed over it. Dallas dominant on the road this past week against Washington, and then San Francisco dominant on the road against Cincinnati. Which one's the bigger story? To me, it's got to be San Fran. I picked them to be a contender this year, and look at them go. San Francisco balling out even without Tevin Coleman this past week. You know, Matt Breida contributing. Jimmy Garoppolo looking pretty good. George Kittle, already one of the better tight ends in the league. And we saw some contributions from that receiving core. Granted, it's against Cincinnati. But Cincinnati gave Seattle some work on the road. So Cincinnati's no slouch either this year. At least not yet. Usually later in the year, if they start losing, they start losing. But right now, it's got to be San Fran. Number four in the standout seven. Let's take a look at the AFC North. This one's going to be a tight one for most of the year, I would think. Right now, Baltimore 2-0. A cupcake start. How did Baltimore get Miami and Arizona to start the year? How is that? And Pittsburgh gets New England and the Seahawks. How is that fair? And no, like not even close. And then you look at Cleveland. Cleveland got... I mean, they got the in-between, right? Tennessee's decent, and the Jets should be decent, but they didn't have Darnold, so they were awful. I mean, I don't know. Cupcakes to start, 2-0. With Ben done for the year, I'd say Pittsburgh probably won't make a run, although I did like what I saw from Mason Rudolph last week. Sitting two games back of Baltimore, obviously in a tough spot. I'm intrigued to see how Rudolph does this week. James Conner nicked up. I thought he played pretty well. Couldn't finish the comeback against Seattle, but that's not all on him. I thought he played pretty well. We saw he threw a pick, and it wasn't really his fault. And when you have a rookie quarterback, or rookie as in first year starting, sorry. When you have your backup quarterback, and you really can't afford to make mistakes like that, and of course that comes up biting them. Cleveland took down the Jets. The Jets didn't have their starting quarterback. Baker was decent in the first half. Talent discrepancy completely showed up in the second half. Cincinnati here to play. Spoiler. So this is the part I was talking about earlier. Number five, I'm going to call a dumpster check. We're dumpster diving here. We're looking for, you know, what team out of these 12 is going to be the playoff team, right? Because statistically, well, if you want to get into the real math, 12% is a little under 1-8. You know, 1-12 gives you about 0.08. So we need 1.5 of these teams. So let's say, what's the over-under here? Do two of these teams make the playoffs? Will Cincinnati make the playoffs? No. Will the New York? No. Neither New York team will make the playoffs. If Darnold comes back relatively soon, it could be interesting for the Jets, but I'm not sure that he will. Will Jacksonville make the playoffs? Jacksonville, arguably the best team out of this trash heap, yeah? I think Jacksonville's got a fair shake. They've got a shot at making the postseason. They really do. Arizona, no. Carolina with Cam being hurt, no. Washington, no. Pittsburgh, another interesting one. Probably not a playoff team. But, I remind you, when Big Ben made his first appearance as a starting quarterback for the Steelers, they kind of went on a run. They went off. We talked about that last week. Who's to say Mason Rudolph can't do the same? I mean, I wouldn't bet on it. But... they're interesting. Miami, oh, that's funny. They're going to Josh Rosen. No, they're not. No chance. Oakland. Crazier things have happened. Denver. Crazier things have happened. Jets, no. I'd say if I had to pick one of these teams, give me the Gardner Minshew show, showing up to the playoffs, balling, showing up with that beautiful long hair and the mustache. Look at him. The guy's a legend already. Fan favorite already. Gotta love it. It's going to be hard when Foles comes back, I'm telling you, folks. Number six, just wanted to dive into this Sunday night football game from last week a little bit more. First half, we saw Carson Wentz go down. We saw just about every Philly Eagle go down. We saw Jackson hurt. We saw Jeffrey hurt. We saw everyone hurt. And then we saw this weird two-point conversion play from Wentz where he dove. But there's a new ruling last year. I didn't know this was a rule where if you're diving, since you're a quarterback, you're just technically still giving yourself up. So it's 17-12 instead of 17-14. But then as this game went on, even though Wentz was nicked up and they've had him in concussion testing at the end of the first half, Wentz started to look more and more like Carson Wentz. He really did. He looked like the Carson Wentz that I had winning the MVP a few years ago. Then they go down, they take the lead, they leave too much time for Matty Ice at home. For some reason, and Chris Collinsworth talked about this, and I thought he was right on the nose. He was first guessing it, not second guessing it. Atlanta rushing to, you know, get plays off, like there's not 3 minutes left in the game, and they don't have all their timeouts. And then by 2:20, they're on fourth down. And then Julio, you know, this was amazing to me. And it's really interesting, because Julio Jones wanted a new contract. They told him to come to camp. He went to camp, played in the preseason. There you go. Got his new contract. Julio Jones, I believe it was one play prior or two plays prior to the penultimate touchdown here, and we'll get into it, obviously. But the throw is slightly behind him on a slant, and it gets broken up by a DB, and the DB kind of taunts him, you know, and he's like, yeah, I broke it up. And I always love those yeah, I broke it up celebrations, because Julio Jones just looks at him, and then he walks back to the huddle. Okay, yeah, you broke it up. And then on fourth and short, they check to a screen to Julio. He makes one guy miss, and he takes it all the way to the house, and it's just... Come on, dude. This is what you get. You're showing up and you're making this big of a deal out of a breakup. It's not fourth down. You didn't win the game. And it wasn't even that nice of a play. You know, you poke the bear, usually doesn't end well. Julio to the crib. Great call by Dirk Cutter. Recently, you know, was the head coach of Tampa Bay, and now he's back here. Pretty good. Pretty good. Welcome back. You know, Nelson Agholor was pretty much their number one wideout. In this one, there was a really weird ruling in this game, and I'm going to be completely honest with you, I don't exactly remember all of the details of it, but Philadelphia got to call four timeouts because Atlanta had an injured player as well, and there was no penalty and no runoff. Can we talk about that a little bit? They got to call four. That's why they lost the game. Ball don't lie. That's the classic rule, right? They got to call four timeouts, and there's no penalty and no runoff. And then they said, well, if they call a fifth one, there'll be a runoff. There'll be a penalty. No. You get three timeouts. Why do you magically get... Oh, well, there was an injury on both sides. Huh? I. This is clearly a gray area in the rules, yeah? But, no. No, you don't get to call four timeouts. No, that's not a thing. No, sorry. That completely blew my mind. I've never seen that before. That completely blew my mind. And then, you know, Zach Ertz comes back to the ball on a curl on fourth down, and he comes just a little bit too much. Comes back to the ball just a little bit too much. They're short. The Falcons win it at home. This is another great Eagles-Falcons game. Usually these games are really good, and this one did not disappoint. I'd love to see it as a playoff rematch or, you know, another game later in the year. Atlanta's pretty good, and with Drew Brees hurt, they could sneak in and win that division. Philly's pretty good as well, I think, and I'd love to see them play Dallas, which I'll get my wish soon enough. Number seven, this is just a small point, and then I'll do my little news and notes, and then we'll get into the pick'em portion of this week's show. Why everyone's here, I think. I hope. That's why I'm here. Well, I'm here for a bunch of reasons, but, you know, that's the best part of the show, obviously. So, is it me, or are there more, just more flags this year? I tried to dig deep into the statistics on this, and they're not fantastic, but it seems that there are just more penalties this season. I don't know. It's really weird to me. It's not something I've seen too often. It just seems that, you know, in terms of seasons past, it just, like, you know, right now, leading the league in penalties per game, I think it was Cleveland at 13.5 through week two. That's not counting the Thursday night football game. 13.5. That's a lot. And at the bottom was five. Five a game, okay. And I looked at the averages in seasons past, and the bottom of the league is usually about between 5 point, maybe 5 and 5.5, and the top of the league is usually about 9. And I know it's 2 weeks, small sample size, but it seemed like there was also a lot more teams pushing towards 8, 9, 10 average penalties, when it's usually, you know, between 9 and 5, with them sitting around 6 or 7. So it seems to me, I don't know if it's a thing where it was a point of emphasis on certain things, or perhaps just a really weird twist on a small sample size. That's possible, you know, it's empirical data, it's a very small sample size, so perhaps, you know, the NFL will tell them to calm down, and then we'll see some missed flags later in the year like we always do, and then it'll even out, right? They're being almost a little bit too proactive, and I mean, it's slowing the games down, I feel like, right? Like, the early games are bleeding, the early games always bleed into the late window. I'm a big fan of NFL Red Zone, so this is how I figured it out. But it seems that more and more and more games are bleeding even longer, and we've seen plenty of touchdowns called back for penalties, and I mean, that happens every week, it happens, you know, all the time. But we saw 5 in one game in San Francisco-Tampa Bay, and it's like, all right, guys, we're getting a little out of control here. All right, can we calm down now? I don't know. Just keep an eye out. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm imagining it, but keep an eye out. I think the penalty calls are trending up this year. I think this might be a recurring theme. Just some bottom notes, maybe a couple of injuries here. Reportedly, Kenyon Drake, starting running back, the legend who scored the touchdown on the Miami Miracle last season against the New England Patriots, reportedly also wants out of Miami. He saw that it worked for Minkah Fitzpatrick, and he's like, whoa, I'll have what he's having. Speaking of Fitz, Ryan Fitzpatrick, benched in Miami, I don't really get this move. I mean, why bring him in then? Why not just name Rosen the starter off rip and let Rosen start all the games? Why bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick to start 2 games? Like, that's peak, you know, I wouldn't call it dysfunction, I guess I would say, but that's peak, you know, not thinking at all. Like, what were you thinking? What? And they have Josh Rosen starting his first game. Here's the next 2 games for them. And then they have a bye. They have the Cowboys in Dallas. Oh, no. Then they have the Chargers at home. If they would have waited until week 6, that's after their bye. There's a bye after the Charger game, like I said. They would have had Washington at home. Ease them in. Then you got Buffalo on the road. You might be able to sneak one. Then you got Pittsburgh. Ben's hurt. Who knows? Then you got the Jets. Then you're in Indy. They don't have Andrew Luck. Like, that would have been the perfect landing spot. Or even if you want to make them wait longer, you could always wait to that stretch. You know, I mean, they got Giants-Bengals in week 15 and 16. That's your easy landing spot. But to bench him after 2 weeks makes little to no sense. Am I wrong on this one, guys? This kind of a... I don't know, I guess they weren't thinking when they made the move to bring him in, because now he's just there. He's a veteran backup. You could have just named Rosen the starter, and I bet you Fitzpatrick would have been fine being the backup. You know, he's not exactly the guy that's going to ask his way out. He's a team player, usually. Whatever. Whatever, folks. Whatever. And then we also have some injuries to 2 big offensive linemen. Joe Staley, hurt for San Francisco. That's a big one. He's been there for a long time, leader of that offensive line. Still a really good player. And Eric Fisher, Kansas City left tackle, also hurt. That one could be pretty impactful as they take on the Ravens this week. And just one last note on the... 2 more, actually. And supposedly, and obviously, you know, Jalen Ramsey, we didn't talk about this. Jalen Ramsey played in this Thursday night football game, even though he demanded a trade, and they're supposedly going to trade him. They want at least a 1, probably 2. Supposedly, the Ravens offered a 1st, a 2nd, and Hayden Hurst for Ramsey, and they said no. That sounds like a pretty darn good deal to me. All right, well, to each their own, I guess. I don't think you're going to get much better than that. I mean, if the Ravens got Jalen Ramsey, it would be real interesting. I'll tell you that much. It really would. And that seems like a team where, you know, the leadership is so good they could probably try to handle a guy like him. There's also rumors, obviously, of him going to the Chiefs, so I guess the Ravens had to bid, you know? I mean, who knows? Maybe he goes to the Patriots. Maybe the Patriots bring in two former All-Pros in one during one season. Be a little insane, right? Don't think they'd want to trade him, I guess, in conference? I don't know. Not 100% sure. Anyway, my final note here is just something I wrote down because it came to me while I was looking up and researching the Ryan Clark thing. I know some of you might not be interested, but, you know, like I said, New York sports fan, it's one of the things that always comes to my mind. It reminded me, my favorite pitcher growing up was Mike Mussina for the New York Yankees, and he was just inducted into the Hall of Fame. And the thing that really tied them together in my head is how they're pretty much opposites, right? It's kind of intriguing. So, Eli Manning, a compiler, of course, had a good career. But Eli Manning's career is buoyed by two of the more legendary playoff runs, you know, in New York sports, one of the most legendary playoff runs in football history. Taking down, you know, going in as a team that nobody thought would be good, a wild card team, going in and beating Tampa, beating Dallas, beating Brett Favre in his house, and then beating, you know, the 18-0 Patriots in the Super Bowl. His career is good, buoyed by two legendary crystallizing moments for him, right? And he's a champion. People love champions. Meanwhile, you take a look at Mike Mussina, 270 wins, didn't win 20 games till his last year, didn't win a Cy Young, came in top five in Cy Young voting a bunch of times. I wrote a whole article about it. If you look me up, you'll find it. It was years ago when I thought he should have been a first ballot, because if you compare him to whatever, this isn't a baseball show, you get my point. So he had a great career, but he didn't have that crystallizing moment, which held him back from getting into the Hall of Fame for a couple of ballots. And now we're going to see Eli, you know, who doesn't have the career that I would say Mike Mussina had, where he's got all the he's got everything but the accolades. Eli's got the championship, he's got the moment, he's got the thing that'll stick in your head. But, you know, if we're playing apples to oranges here, he's not as good a quarterback as Mike Mussina was a pitcher. It's interesting, though. It'll take them both a couple of ballots to get into the Hall of Fame, but at the end of the day, they'll both be in there. Just some fun facts for you. Anyway, let's jump into the pick'em portion of this week's show. My favorite part of the show, your favorite part of the show. And we're going to start with, remember the 60-second picks? Yeah, we used to do 60-second picks at least one a week last year. We're going to bring them back. Haven't had too many of that. Well, I mean, every Dolphin game and Jet game. Every Dolphin game this year has been a 60-second pick. We just haven't officially called it. Bring back the 60-second picks. And I say that because we're starting with a 60-second pick. Dolphins head to Dallas to take on the Cowboys at 1 p.m. tomorrow. Dallas is rolling, and Kellen Moore says Zeke Elliott's going to get the ball even more this week. There's very little chance that the Dolphins win this one. I'm taking Dallas, obviously. If I had to say 1 to 100, I'd put it below 10% chance. I'd say, with Josh Rosen at the helm, I really didn't like what I saw too much from Josh Rosen last year. Granted, on a bad team, but he's on a bad team again this year. No. They're not going to win this one. Cowboys, easily. The next one's a sneaky good game. A battle of the bees as the Bengals head to Buffalo to take on the Bills. Now, it's real interesting. The Bills sitting at 2-0. And, you know, the Bills have a tendency, at least in the past, to have these weirdly good starts and then kind of fall off the map. I thought that would happen a few years ago when they made the playoffs. They stuck around, made the playoffs, even with that awful offense. Now, I'm a fan of Josh Allen, but Devin Singletary's not going to play this week. And Cincinnati got thumped last week, had a good game against Seattle. I think Cincinnati has a pretty good one, and Cincinnati pulls off a quote-unquote upset on the road. Next, we have a battle between two potential NFC contenders, actually. The Detroit Lions head to Philadelphia, fresh off of their upset of the Chargers, thanks to the Chargers not signing a kicker. That upset me a little bit, in case you couldn't tell. The Lions taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, this one's interesting because the Eagles are nicked up in the receiving corps tremendously. Nelson Agholor was their go-to guy last week. Zach Ertz, obviously a great player. But DeSean Jackson's still hurt. Alshon Jeffrey's hurting as well. I want to take Philly at home, but I just don't know if there's enough talent left in that, you know, skill position gap. I think Detroit might win this one on the road. Look out for Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones, and Kerryon Johnson, who didn't have that big of a game last week. Next, we got a divisional matchup. This will be another 60-second pick. Jets at Patriots. Patriots fresh off all the, you know, 11 days of turmoil that was Antonio Brown's tenure as a Patriot. There's little to no chance that they lose this one with a third-string quarterback starting, because we saw Myles Garrett penalized for a late hit that went on to break Trevor Siemian's ankle, and now he's out for the year. Tremendous. On a late hit, no less. Wow. Go figure. Yeah, Jets, 1% chance. Even smaller chance than the Dolphins against the Cowboys. Patriots win this one pretty easily to try and take everyone's mind off the fact that Antonio Brown was ever a Patriot. Next, sneaky good game. 1 p.m. kick from Indianapolis. The Falcons head there to take on the Colts. The Falcons looked like the Falcons on Sunday Night Football. They really did. It was kind of encouraging, I imagine, for Falcons fans out there. And their defense looked pretty okay, I'll be honest. They didn't look that bad. The Colts are also a pretty good team. They really are. I'm high on this Colts team. Like I said before, I was high on them with Luck. I'm also high on them with Brissett. They're coming off a close win with their kicker shanking kicks left and right against the Titans, and what could have been a win against the Chargers. I'm taking the Colts to hold serve and win at home. I really am. This Colts team is good. Next, we got what could be an old-school game a little bit, or a matchup between two old-school franchises at the least. We have the Raiders heading to Minnesota to take on the Vikings. The Raiders have been better than I expected. The Vikings fresh off laying an awful egg against the Packers. They looked atrocious. Actually, I believe I was going to bring it up earlier in the show, but I must have lost it in my notes. We're going to talk about which was worse, them laying an egg or the Packers holding, which is a bigger story, rather. Ran out of room in the big story portion because I went long on the Manning thing. Sorry about that. But with that being said, I could see them laying two eggs in a row. See, that's the thing. I would say there's no way. Well, you know, by Ryan Clark standards, with a non-capable quarterback at the helm, you know, how can the Vikings win this one at home? I think they do. I think the Vikings win this one. I think, if nothing more than because they need to try and keep it close. You don't want to fall behind this Packers team while they're hot and then just get, you know, before you know it, you're 3, 4, 5 games out with only 6 to play. I think they win this one, although it should be pretty fun. Next, what everyone's expecting to be the game of the week. The Ravens, led by Lamar Jackson and his hyper-inflated stats off of thrashing two bad teams, and Patrick Mahomes, who's just really good at football. The Chiefs are nicked up. Like I mentioned, they're not going to have Eric Fisher, I believe. I think they're also not going to have their lead back, Damian Williams, in this one. He's out with a knee injury. This one should be interesting. The Chiefs are nicked up. If there's any time for the Ravens to go in and upset them, it's this one. But I don't know, folks. It's hard for me to bet against Mahomes. The guy plays so darn good, and this game is in Kansas City. Give me Kansas City. This is probably the most iffy I've been on a Kansas City pick, and I picked them to beat the Pats last year. This is the most iffy I've been in a regular season matchup. Give me Kansas City. Next, we have a Super Bowl rematch, I believe. The Broncos take on the Green Bay Packers from Lambeau Field. Joe Flacco still leading the team. And let's talk about this Broncos-Bears ending last week, by the way. Flacco leads them down there earlier in the fourth quarter, throws a pick when all they needed to do was just, you know, hold the ball, take a three, throws a pick, which winds up coming back to bite them. They lose this game on a last-second field goal when time expired. You know, and it's interesting, I thought about it looking at the replay. The NFL might want to go to the tenths of the seconds when it comes down to under a minute here, because the way it looked like they tried to call timeout live while the game was over. But they go back and give him a second. They didn't review it from what I saw. They just gave, no, he called timeout with a second left. And then Eddie Pinheiro kicks the field goal and the game's over. Kudos to Eddie Pinheiro for making the field goal. You know, obviously the Bears, they've had their kicking woes. But they just stole that one from Denver in Denver. No review, no nothing, and it's, you know, got to leave a bad taste in Vic Fangio's mouth, the new coach of the Broncos, because he worked for Denver as their D coordinator. This was supposed to be him beating his old team, and he did. That's rough. You know what's even more rough? They got to face Aaron Rodgers and the hot Packers defense, and they're going to lose this one on the road. Next, the first of our 2-4-0-5 kicks, the Panthers with a backup quarterback in all likelihood against the Cardinals with I was going to say with a backup everything else, but Larry Fitzgerald's on that team, and so is David Johnson and a couple of talented guys. Even with a backup QB, the Panthers are probably the more talented squad. But Kyler Murray kept it kind of close against the Ravens last week. There's 2 weeks in a row where a team seemed to kind of count them out late in the game, and then they kind of took over. Let's see if the Cardinals can't win this one. They might not be the better team, but that doesn't mean they can't win this one. Cardinals at home. Next, we have the Giants and the Bucks in our second 4:05 kick from Raymond James Stadium, the big pirate ship, as Chris Berman used to call it. I'm not taking the Giants. I think the Bucks have a more talented offense, and both defenses are not great, but the Bucks are better. Bruce Arians is a better coach. Give me the Bucks. I think it's quite possible that Daniel Jones reinvigorates this squad, and they bring home a win. I think it would have been possible for them to get a win the last 2 weeks if they, you know, dedicated themselves to Saquon Barkley a little bit more and, you know, maybe approach things a little differently schematically. I'm not claiming to be a football expert, but yeah, I don't think Pat Shurmur has done an exemplary job the first 2 weeks. And I think that's exemplified by the fact that, you know, during his regularly scheduled weekly showing with Mike Francesa on the radio, Francesa called him out and he said, well, they're not very good. They're a terrible team. They can't stop anyone, and they're not very good at scoring either. And then he cancels his thing. Like, for some reason, he thinks that Francesa was wrong. No, he's 100% right. This team has a bad defense, and they're not great on offense either. So give me the Bucks at home. Like I said, wouldn't shock me, but I can't pick this team. Not with that bordering on dysfunction at the helm. Interesting one that could have been a great one in our first 4:25 kick. The Saints head up to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. Anytime the Saints are in Seattle, you got a lot of Beast Quake highlights and flashbacks. The Saints going with Teddy Bridge in this one. I like Teddy Bridge. I do. I liked him when he was in Minnesota. I'm glad he's getting a shot. He's also not confirmed technically to be the starter. Taysom Hill is going to get some snaps. I think the Saints are a good squad, although I think there's going to be growing pains without Drew. If this game was in New Orleans, I'd pick the Saints. It's in Seattle. Give me Russ and the Seahawks. Next, our second 4:25 kick is going to be a good one, folks. The Houston Texans head to Los Angeles, the City of Angels, to take on the Chargers, who are still rolling with a punter at kicker. And as a result, I'm taking the Texans. I think the Chargers are a darn good team, and I think the Chargers are good enough to win this game. But when you have a punter at kicker and you can't confirm the easy kicks, that's why they lost to Detroit. They should have won that game. They missed two field goals. They should have won that game easily. Close game, but they were in control. No, they lose it. Phil Rivers throws an awful interception late in the game, going into double coverage against Darius Slay. Darius Slay was getting eaten up a little bit during the game, but to go into double coverage, you're asking for a lot out of your wideout. No, get out of here. And then, no. We're taking the Texans in this one on the road. I like what Kenny Stills has been contributing. I like that Will Fuller gets to be the number three. Hopefully, they can try and keep Deshaun Watson upright. That's the equalizer in this game. He is sacked tons of times, and facing a team that has Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, not going to be the easiest for them, but I'm taking the Texans. Damn punter at kicker. Who would do it? 4:25, our other and final 4:25, but another one between two legendary teams, two teams that have had the better dynasties in football history. The Steel Curtain, the Pittsburgh Steelers, head to San Fran to take on the San Francisco 49ers. Excuse me, Santa Clara to take on the San Francisco 49ers. I like Mason Rudolph. I like what he brings. I think this one will be sneaky close. But then again, we saw San Fran run away with it against Cincinnati last week. They're a good team. Give me San Fran in this one at home. Our 8:20 kick Sunday night on NBC is a game I never thought would be a Sunday night kick. The Los Angeles Rams head to Cleveland to take on the Browns. The Browns in prime time twice out of the first three times to start the year. I never thought we'd see that. I mean, against the Rams, no less. Either way, the Rams are the better football team. I think the Rams go on the road and win this one. I think this one is, you know, this is the might be the off-season, you know, explosive kind of, ooh, that would be a fun Super Bowl, I guess, maybe? I don't know. I don't know if anyone picked this one. I'm not super sold on Cleveland, to be honest. I like their personnel, but I don't think they've been playing that great. I mean, it was too close against the Jets in the first half last week. They played awful against the Titans the week before. I'm still not sold on whether Todd Gurley is healthy. Todd Gurley really hasn't been getting Todd Gurley touches. He's shown flashes, though. I think the Rams have enough to win this one, even on the road. Our Monday night game this week is Bears at Redskins. I don't exactly know why, but we did have Browns-Jets last week. So, I mean, with Darnold, it would have been interesting, but this one, not so much. No Alex Smith. I think the Bears win this one. It is interesting, though. Case Keenum and Mitchell Trubisky kind of profile similarly as quarterbacks. I think Trubisky's better, and he's got a higher upside, but a little bit of mobility. Obviously, Trubisky got a little bit more. Not the best passer. An offense that isn't exactly the most talented. Bears have a much better defense. Give me the Bears on the road. Finally, our Thursday night game for week 4. This one's going to be interesting. This is a playoff rematch from years and years ago. The Philadelphia Eagles head to Green Bay to take on the Packers. Now, if we look at this as a 4-day stretch, and this is the interesting part of these Thursday night games, yeah? I was a big fan of when people mentioned maybe, you know, have people play a Thursday night game after their bye. So you start the season with a Thursday night game, then you don't have Thursday night football till about week 4, because, you know, byes don't start yet. Maybe week 4, week 5, you know what I mean? So, probably week 5. It's interesting to me, obviously no one doing that, or maybe you have a Thursday then a bye? I don't know. So we have the Eagles who are playing at home against Detroit. That's going to be a tough one. And with their wideouts nicked up, then they have to go on the road 4 days later, and play at Lambeau Field with their wideouts presumably still nicked up 4 days later. DeSean Jackson probably won't play in that game. Alshon Jeffrey, maybe? Meanwhile, you have Detroit, who's playing Denver, who's not nearly as good. They have a good defense, but their offense is not nearly as good. Even with Emmanuel Sanders playing well to start the year, Cortland Sutton playing well, Phillip Lindsay having a little bit of a regression, but they're targeting him a little bit more from the defensive side. Broncos, not a bad team, but they're not Detroit. Packers, and they get to stay at home. The Packers win this one. You know, it's going to be interesting, and it'll be fun. I want to see how this Packers defense can try to contain Carson Wentz. But give me Green Bay at home. That'll bring us to the end of this week's episode, the end of the pick'em portion, and by extension, the end of episode 59 of the Necessary Roughness podcast. We hit the big 6-0 next week, folks. Isn't that exciting? Join us again next Saturday afternoon for the next episode. And as always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.